Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of March the 17th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, I'll have a rundown of what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this week, and an interview with Summer Stevenson, a project manager who is working on the Housing Accelerator Fund. The program's annual report went to Council on Monday night, and we'll get an update. But first, Council heard a presentation from the Community Economic Development Commission, or CEDC, and Tourism Thunder Bay. Tourism is a part of the CEDC. The presentation highlighted the Tourism Development Fund, a review of what happened in 2024, and look at priorities for tourism in 2025. The presentation was delivered by Paul Pepe, the Manager of Tourism, and Jamie Taylor, the CEO of the CEDC. A couple of announcements on Monday night. Councillor Brian Hamilton will host a McKellar Ward meeting. It will take place on April the 16th at the Slovak Legion, starting at 7 p.m. Councillor Michael Zucino will have a Red River Ward meeting. It will take place on March the 26th at 7 p.m. at the 55 Plus Center. And Councillor Andrew Folds will have a Current River Ward meeting. That will be at the Current River Rec Center, taking place on April the 8th at 7 o'clock. Two matters came out of closed session on Monday night. One was when the city will purchase 119 Simpson Street for $250,000. The parcel of land purchase will be funded from the land development account. The other matter was a property-related matter for Science North, and it has to do with a letter being provided to Science North to have a new science center built at Phase 2 of Prince Arthur's Landing. That's at the waterfront. It would be in close proximity to the art gallery. There is no funding attached to this resolution, just the letter of support to once again build that science center. There will also be a closed session that will start at 4:30 on Monday, March the 24th. It will be to discuss a property-related matter, labor relations and employee matters, information that was supplied in confidence regarding negotiations, as well as information that belongs to the city, which has a potential monetary value. Council got an update on Monday night on the Housing Accelerator Fund. The Housing Accelerator Fund annual report was presented, noting that the city is one of the top-performing cities, surpassing its first-year housing supply growth target. During the first reporting period, 355 new housing units were created in the city, which is 102% of the target and 20% of the three-year target. However, there were 10 units lost to demolition during this period, so that gives a net gain of 345 units. The target for the next 2 years is 676 units per year. The report notes that the action plan for housing is also on schedule, with most items complete or on track. In 2024, the city permitted more housing units than any other single year since 2013. The goal is to keep that momentum going for 2025 and beyond. As part of the Housing Accelerator Fund, 59 grant applications were approved, which used $8.1 million to support the construction of 482 units. That includes 130 affordable housing units, many of which will be built in 2025. The city has earmarked $2.5 million in grants for this year. In total, up to $20.7 million has been awarded to the city by the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, or CMHC. The hope is that a total of 600 units can be built through the funding, with the city approving nearly 1,700 new units by February of 2027. The annual report submitted to CMHC considers the city to be on track. The city's action plan was submitted to CMHC, which is a condition of receiving the second and third funding advances. Some of the items in the action plan include enhancements to the Strategic Core Community Improvement Plan, as well as the Construction Assistance Grant Program, and that is to incentivize development in the core areas, developing and adopting the Affordable Rental Housing Funding Program for not-for-profits and Indigenous organizations, hiring an Affordable Housing Navigator to support not-for-profit organizations through the development process, introducing a new housing community improvement plan, as well as four grant programs to support urban densification and the best use of existing infrastructure, as well developing and launching the online grant application portal, receiving and processing 91 applications across all those grant programs, approving 59 of those applications, updating the city's official plan and the zoning bylaw, designating 14 municipally owned properties as surplus and listing them on the market, reviewing 350 vacant industrial parcels less than half a hectare in size to determine the residential potential, as well as prioritizing future studies. As well, there was also the completion of development studies on high potential parcels of land to reduce barriers to development. The Housing Accelerator Fund will be used to help pay for three capital projects as well in the city this year. They include extending Empire Avenue by 100 meters, which will support the creation of 60 housing units, the creation, or construction rather, of sewer and water along Burwood Road to Oliver Road. The privately held and publicly held lands in this area can support the development of 3,000 housing units. As well, the design and construction of 650 meters of new water lines, storm, and sanitary sewers along Central Avenue will also be funded. The work will take place from Amber Drive north and then west along Central Avenue. The city estimates that about 1,260 housing units can be built in that area. The report notes that there is a limited amount of funding available for top-performing cities, which is why the city needs to continue to meet the criteria. Thunder Bay has submitted a proposal for additional funding to create a vacant and dilapidated buildings program. This would allow city staff to start work to address vacant and dilapidated buildings and could then encourage owners to address issues with these buildings to get them back into use, as well as available for housing. Proposals for vacant buildings will be evaluated based on their impact, and there's no guarantee that the city's submission, rather, will be accepted for further funding. Some of the goals for the Housing Accelerator Fund this year include administering the Additional Dwelling Unit Grant Program, the Affordable Rental Housing Funding Program, the Construction Assistance Grant Program, and the Multi-Unit Residential Grant Program, administering the Surplus Land Strategy and the Sale of Lands for Housing, and working with the Mayor's Task Force on Building More Homes Advisory Committee to review existing grant programs and recommend potential modifications to be implemented in Year 3. In 2025, Thunder Bay will need 676 net new units to remain on track with the supplied housing growth target. This volume of development activity has not been experienced in Thunder Bay since the early 1990s. We'll hear more about the Housing Accelerator Fund and the targets and the goals when Summer Stevenson, the project manager on the Housing Accelerator Fund, will join me in just a few minutes. Council approved a recommendation to appoint weed inspectors in the city. There was a lot of discussion on this matter, which resulted in the report being approved. Three names were put forward to enforce the Weed Control Act. The provincial act was put in place to prevent the spread of noxious weeds in the province and to attempt to limit their damage caused by their spread. The act states that landowners have a legal obligation to manage noxious weed species on their properties. There are 25 weed species listed in the Act, which include the common barberry, smooth bedstraw, the European buckthorn, wild chevrille, coltsfoot, common crupina, woolly cupgrass, the dodder, dog strangling vine, jointed goatgrass, giant hogweed, knapweed, kudzu, wild parsnip, poison hemlock and poison ivy, ragweed, ragwort, sow thistle, cypress spurge, leafy spurge, bull thistle, Canada thistle, and serrated tussock. The provincial act requires that there is at least one weed inspector in the city. Under the act, a weed inspector can enter a property between sunrise and sunset, which includes any buildings except for a home, and inspect the lands, building, machinery, or crops to look for the noxious weeds. And if they're found, the plants and seeds can be destroyed. The three people in the city who are weed inspectors are the supervisor of municipal enforcement, as well as municipal enforcement officers who specialize in property standards. And finally, Council approved some updates to user fees for Thunder Bay Fire Rescue. The amendment is needed because of some fees in Schedule U previously approved by Council were missed due to a clerical error. Several user fees from the Fire Department were not included in the original resolution passed by Council. The amendment does not have any impact on the 2025 budget, as it is a clerical error. The user fees are an increase of between 3.11% and 3.7% for items like fire reports, letters of compliance, and requested inspections of properties for daycares, group homes, alcohol and gaming commission requests, occupancy load calculations, and nursing homes. And that's a wrap as to what happened at Council this week. For more information on anything that happens at Council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. Housing and growth go hand in hand. Both are major priorities in Thunder Bay. Growing the city, but also growing the housing stock and making sure that people who want to live in Thunder Bay can find an affordable space to live. The city has received money from the federal government as part of the Housing Accelerator Fund, and Council got an update on Monday night as to how that funding has helped increase the number of places to live in Thunder Bay. Summer Stevenson is a project manager with the city who is the lead on the Housing Accelerator Fund, and she was at Council on Monday night. Summer, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you making it in today. So the big headline that we've seen on every media outlet in Thunder Bay, we made the housing target for 2024. So what exactly does that mean?
We did make the housing target for 2024. And so what that means is when we signed on to the Housing Accelerator Fund, Thunder Bay committed to developing 1,691 units by February 2027. So when we heard that number, there was a little bit of panic.
Right.
It's a big number.
Rightfully so, right?
that is a really, really ambitious number for Thunder Bay. And what CMHC does is they divide that big target into three. So in our first year, we were assigned a target of 339 net units. So it's a little bit more manageable. And what we will look to in year two and three is annual targets of 676 net units.
That's a big increase.
A big increase. So the idea is that through the Housing Accelerator Fund, we implement different initiatives. Some of these initiatives include surplus lands for new housing or new infrastructure, which will support housing. And that's a little bit of a lag in terms of permits. So last year, although we surplus 14 pieces of property, we won't expect permits on those properties until 2025.
Right. Okay.
So that's why it's a bit of an acceleration in the target. So in year one, 339 net new units, and Thunder Bay hit that target 102%. So we hit, we went a little bit over with 345 net new units.
Okay. And do they count the net new units? Because I know there was it was actually, 355, and there was a demolition or something like that, right?
Yes. So they count, it's all in net. So they look at the demolitions because in Thunder Bay, we only had 10 demolitions, but maybe in a bigger municipality, what they might see is a larger number of demolitions for revitalization projects and new construction. And so it's important to track the overall change in available housing, not just new housing going up.
Right. Because the idea is that there's just more housing overall. It doesn't have to be new builds necessarily.
Yes.
Okay. So how does this translate? You gave the number there, 345 is our net number for Thunder Bay. How does that translate into homes or apartments? Where are we kind of seeing that housing acceleration, I guess?
So 88% of the 345 net new units fall into the missing middle or other multi-units. So when you say missing middle, what we're talking about is any building that has more than one unit and is less than four stories tall. So that's duplexes, that's fourplexes, sixplexes, and even small apartment buildings. So when we talk about other multi-unit, we're talking about anything above four stories. So those larger apartment buildings or condo buildings. So with 88%, that means the majority of these units are seen in these types of buildings. And that also counts additional dwelling units, because if you add one unit to your single detached dwelling, you now have two units, and that is now a missing middle unit.
And is that missing middle, why is it so important? I remember hearing that term all the time back in the fall.
A missing middle is important because if you think about cities and how they're planned, oftentimes we think about single detached dwellings and we think about high-rise buildings. And missing middle is important because you need something in between. Sometimes missing middle is more practical for individuals who don't want to take care of a giant home, but maybe want a yard space. It could also be more affordable for folks. If you're buying 1/4 of a building as opposed to one full building, that is a more entry-level property for folks as well. So that missing middle is really important when we think about kind of the housing affordability problems and the types of places that people want to live.
Okay. You were talking also about the target just a moment ago, and that we've met the target, we've exceeded it by a couple percentage points. What does meeting this target mean going forward? Because I know that the Housing Accelerator isn't just a one-year thing, it's a multi-year project.
So this is a good indicator that we're on track and that our initiatives are working. So when we look to the Housing Accelerator Fund, you hear the number 20.7 million. So that's the up to amount. We always try to include up to because the program provides us with four equal payments. We received our first payment in 2024 and we'll receive our second payment later this month. And in order to receive that second payment, we had to meet all of those milestone goals in that approved action plan. So it's eight initiatives, milestones in each one of them, lots of deadlines, lots of great work that was done. And in year three, so in 2026, we will also have to make sure that our action plan is on track and we're meeting those milestones. Now, when it comes to the target, in year four, in 2027, we only receive our fourth advance if we've met our housing supply growth target. So it's really important that we stay on track with these annual targets so that in 2027, we're not looking around saying, oh no, we're several hundred short.
And then it's too late, right?
It's too late.
Okay.
The majority of the $8 million is committed to the Affordable Rental Housing Funding Program and will result in 130 new affordable housing units for low-income and moderate-income families, which is fantastic news. There will also be approximately 140 market-rate units, so they'll still be more affordable than some of the market-rate units that we're seeing, but because they don't meet the definition of affordable, they're considered to be market-rate. So that is a really large chunk of that $8 million is that commitment to these organizations. We've entered into financial agreements with each of them, so these contribution agreements to guide how the funding will be dispersed. And once we have building permits, we'll be able to make announcements on what those projects look like.
And that's for a number of different projects, I'm assuming. That's not just one space, that's all across the city?
It's all across the city, so that's six different affordable projects. So there are two projects in the South Core, two projects in the North Core, and then two projects kind of in the central city area.
Okay, so pretty exciting that we're seeing this right across the city. It's not just in one spot.
Yes, and they're all really unique projects. So they vary from smaller apartment complexes to kind of larger, more imaginative spaces, which is really exciting to see.
There's one thing I noticed in the report, and it was talking about three capital projects for 2025. So, and they didn't scream housing to me because they talked about moving sewer and water and a road. So infrastructure, how does that kind of work for housing, I guess?
Yes. So through our housing action plan, we have Initiative 6, which is our secondary and infrastructure planning. I helped us identify high potential infill sites. So we know here in Thunder Bay, we need to prioritize densification. So that means more units and smaller space and infill. We have a lot of space within the city that is already serviced or almost already serviced that provide excellent opportunities for housing. It's close to transit, close to schools, close to parks, all these amenities, and it's not outside of that city boundary. So we don't have to extend roads necessarily. Now, in one of these projects, so the Empire Avenue project, we'll extend a small piece of road to a property that has a city-owned property that's already been surplused. However, the property, even though it has access to sewer and water, it's landlocked. So without a road, it's just a plot of land.
Okay, yes.
There's no housing that can go there. So this road will then allow for that property to be sold and up to 60 units be developed on that piece. So that's a high potential infill site. If we look towards Burwood Road. This is phase two, so this has been a multi-year project. Half is jumping in now, where there will be improvements to the Oliver Road intersection. If we look north of Oliver Road, Burwood Road continues, and there's 58 acres of city-owned land. That's just landlocked in that area. We know Oliver Road is close to the university, close to the college, close to the highway. There's a lot of potential in that area, so this will keep housing below the highway, but still allow for new parcels of land, which is really highlighted in the Central Avenue project.
Right, yes.
This is a prime area in the city. It already has connection to the college and university through those multi-use trails. So you can already cross the whole area on a multi-use trail. And this will bring... So water is already in parts of the area. So this will really just extend the trunk sewer and then start to expand into the area. So this offers an opportunity for developers and builders to you know, come up with different ideas of what to do. And that project will take place over the next 3 years, so beyond the life of the half. But really, all of these projects, what we're doing is extending one service. So some of these are lacking one. So we know the road in Empire, the sewer in Burwood, there's already a road, there's already water, it's just missing a sewer, which is an incentive in itself. It's us saying that, hey, we want you to develop here. We're reducing the cost for you. Or in the case, you know, we're unlocking municipally owned land so that we'll be able to surplus and sell.
And it sounds like all these properties are, or these three projects are kind of built towards fairly dense housing. Like you're talking about this piece of property on Empire Avenue, you were saying 60 units, right? So not a huge piece of land, but a fair amount of potential density, I guess, for that area.
Yes. So it's really important that when we think about actions that the municipality takes, it's for public good. We want to make sure that this land, if we're going to sell it, in the case of a number of these projects, the land may already be surplus, but it needs to be sold. Large swaths of city-owned land, it's important that it's the highest and best use of that land. So what is the highest and best use of that land? We know that with our infrastructure deficit, we need to ensure that we're not extending beyond the boundary of the city. And so this represents an opportunity to, I don't want to say kill two birds with one stone, feed two birds with one stone.
Sure.
but it's an opportunity to both provide housing opportunities, but also reduce the infrastructure required to service a larger number of people.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. Upcoming year for 2025, obviously 676 is the number I'm sure that's that you probably think about all the time. But what are your real goals, I guess, for this upcoming year?
So this upcoming year, we are opening up a new grant intake window on Thursday. So from March 20th to April 17th, we will be accepting applications for our grant programs. So that's the first thing that's coming up just around the corner. And we're really looking forward to seeing what applications folks bring forward, because we know that in order to reach that 676, we're going to need lots of building. We have about 400. So as I mentioned, if all of the grant-funded projects take place and are permitted, we have about 400 units in the pipeline. So we have a gap of 276 units. So this grant intake will help, but we also need folks to think about projects and to start building and start pitching their ideas. So that's the big thing, is grants are coming. We will also be conducting a review of all of the grant programs with the Mayor's Task Force on Building More Homes to see what changes might be, you know, recommended for year three. We still have one more year of these programs. So 2026 is kind of the end of the action plan period. So those are our two major components on the grant side. On the other initiative side, a lot of the work on the Central Avenue development lands relates to the half. So we'll see a development plan, a draft development plan created and brought forward to council for comment. So folks should stay tuned for all of that exciting work. And we have a number of milestones in that action plan that we have to meet in order to get that funding into 2026.
Okay, well, hopefully I'm here. We're here at this point next year and you're saying, hey, we made it again, right? We made 102%.
Well, I hope so. If we look at historical building permit issuance in Thunder Bay, when we hear 676, it does sound like a lot.
Yeah.
But the last time that we issued permits, that many permits in 1 year, was the early 1990s. So we're up against a historical challenge as well. So if we hit the target, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, all the power to you. Summer, I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in today. That is Summer Stevens. She is a project manager working on the Housing Accelerator Fund in Thunder Bay. And she joined me today in the Minute Studio. And a big thanks for listening to The Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes, you can check out our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, plus you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. Chat again next week. Make it a great day.